This episode of Commentary, Trek Stars, is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Season 4, Episode 13 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
And I'm Max.
And today is our recap of
Will Wheaton as a talk show host producer thing.
Yeah, where we're going to be looking at both of his talk show hosting, producing gigs.
Things along those lines.
Right.
And specifically those lines and not other lines, because we'd be here forever.
Right, exactly. That's the thing about Will Wheaton. He's a Renaissance man.
He's actually annoyingly done too many things.
Yeah.
It would have been nice if he just stuck to one deal.
Yeah. I guess being able to travel to other planes of existence sort of opens up a lot of options for you.
But how do you pack for that?
I don't know. But
aren't you curious about that?
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what he packs.
Mm-hmm. Regardless, he's done two of these talk show hosting producing things, and the first of which is Tabletop.
Yeah.
Which was the series where he, or is the series where he plays board games
mm-hmm.
with three other people, usually celebrities, sometimes friends, sometimes both.
I meant to bring this up on the Tabletop episode, but I don't think we're supposed to be calling them board games.
What are we supposed to be calling them?
I think we're supposed to call them tabletop games. Because they don't all involve boards.
Okay. All right.
I'm not going to do that. Just saying. I recognize that there's a discrepancy.
Well, regardless. What did you think about Tabletop?
I've been watching Tabletop for a while. It started not too long ago, but it very quickly became a thing that I checked up on a regular basis.
And what do you think about the show itself?
I think it's really cool. I love watching these people play these games. I love seeing games I haven't played before, and I like seeing the mechanics. I'm a big fan of like game logic, game design, and the artistry of the games. And the guests that he brings on are very enjoyable to watch, interact. Sometimes they're like, you know, really impressive that they're there and having fun playing a game, and sometimes they're just really funny, likable, dynamic people.
I think that we should play board games more often. I think that we should have, and by more often,
Mike,
I mean
they're tabletop games.
I think that we should play tabletop games more often. I think that we should have a game night.
Okay.
You know,
That's fine. Like I mean, like I'm really into games, but like I actually don't play as much of them as I would like expect to. I actually memorized the rules of Dungeons and Dragons before I ever played a game.
Yeah, I've never played Dungeons and Dragons, but. Well, maybe we should start a tabletop gaming night. Maybe it's something that we could do like once a month. We could play that Battlestar Galactica game that I've been talking about forever.
Yeah, I know. I've read that game. I've read the details of that game. It does not sound like a great game.
Oh, it's Battlestar Galactica, you know? It's cool.
Right.
So say we all.
No.
That Star Trek Catan game apparently is on sale at Target for like $35.
Yeah, I have played Settlers of Catan, and some people call it Catan. I don't know which one is correct. I call it Catan because that's how I first heard it. But I like Settlers of Catan quite a bit. I have not played the Star Trek version, but I've seen it played. And somehow it actually was less relatable in that context.
Hmm.
I don't exactly know why, but like it was... Settlers of Catan is a game that feels very intuitive and natural, and Star Trek Catan feels kind of strangely removed.
How about Monopoly?
Monopoly is barely a game.
It's not
Monopoly
barely a game.
is like a dice simulation.
I've read the Monopoly Strategy Guide, which was written by the world champion of Monopoly.
Yes, that's very totally true. There is absolute resource management in Monopoly. There is not a lot.
We could have like a Monopoly tournament because, you know, there's like a speed version and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a version where you're on speed.
Yeah. It could be fun. Clue. Clue's a good one, too.
Okay. Monopoly and Clue are not super great games.
They're pretty great.
No. Clue is not a mystery. Like, Clue is process of elimination gameplay.
It's still fun.
No. Both of these games involve, like, rest very heavily on the outcome of dice rolls. Like, if the games largely are determined, like, who wins is largely determined by the dice. That makes a huge difference. And when a game relies that strongly on a completely random component, then what's the point of strategy? Then why do you even need a person involved? Why don't we just, like, set up a computer to run the dice and see who wins?
No, because it's not just that. You know, there is a strategic component to these things as well.
Not,
you know,
not strong enough to make it.
There's a luck really component engaging. Too with the dice rolls, but I mean, like with Monopoly, like the dice rolls are so fast and furious that I think at some point you reach
Tokyo drifting.
Yeah, you reach a level of like statistical significance in there where the dice rolls don't really matter compared to your ability as a player. You know, it's kind of like playing poker or something like that.
I think you're crazy. There are not that many choices in it. Like, basically, your main choice in the early part of the game is to buy or to not buy. And in the later part of the game, your outcome is determined almost exclusively by the dice rolls of other players.
I disagree with that, but whatever. You know, we can have this debate later on. Maybe while we're playing Klingon Monopoly, or maybe...
Or we any could play, game that isn't Monopoly.
We could play the Star Trek The Next Generation video board game.
I think it would be fun, in order to prove my point, would be like to us have us play a game of Monopoly, and also two players entirely determined by randomness. Two fictional players. It would be Mike, Max, Blue, and Green.
Okay.
And Blue and Green are players that their choices are entirely determined by random numbers.
All right.
And I would say that we would probably win most of the time, but every once in a while they would win. Probably one out of four times, the random player would win. Because there's not that much to Monopoly.
All right. If you say so, I disagree. But whatever. For me personally, I did enjoy this show, although I think there's a lot of, you know, sort of like inside baseball going on, you know, and if you're not familiar with the game or not familiar with gaming in general, then I think you're sort of left out in a sense. And while the guests do help it, I think that that's kind of a crapshoot as well, because like we were saying on the episode, you know, there are times where you might get a guest who on paper seems really solid, but when you get them in the room, if they're having an off day or whatever, or if they're not gelling with the other people in the room, it can not work as well as you might hope.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of feel the exact opposite about that. Like, I want them to not work super well. I want to see them off.
I mean, you want to see, like, a nice little character study, in a sense.
No. No. I don't want to see them nailing it. Like, I don't really care about somebody being particularly entertaining or exciting. I want to just hear them be them.
I mean, I see the appeal of that for sure. You know, I mean, that's why I sort of like unfiltered, let's say, behind-the-scenes stuff on the making of movies or whatever is to get a chance to see the artist, you know, at rest, you know.
But when, even then, when, it's still edited. I want it unedited.
Okay. Yeah. And that's fine, you know, and that component to it is interesting. Whether or not it makes for compelling television, I mean, it's okay, but I don't think it can sustain its, like, 2.5 hour runtime for like the unedited version, for example, you know. But it's still interesting. And it's not bad. It's just not tremendously great. So
I don't know. I think that if you turn on a thing like that's 2.5 hours long,
mm-hmm.
and it's people playing a game,
Yeah.
Like, you're doing that so that at some point you forget that you're watching it. Like, you just eventually just become part of the room.
Yeah.
That's what I like about it.
I mean, it's cool that that exists. At the same time, I'd never watch it. You know? And that's kind of how I feel about tabletop on the whole. It's an intriguing concept, and they are doing the best job they possibly can with that concept. Whether or not it's a strong enough concept to sustain an entire series, that I'm not positive on.
There were a series of podcasts that Penny Arcade did a bunch of years ago where they played D&D, and Will Wheaton was in a few of them. And they were audio only, and they were amazing.
Yeah.
And if Tabletop did one of those for every one of their sets of episodes, one of their seasons, I would be all over that. D&D is filled with creativity, and there are a lot of different angles for interesting content.
Yeah.
And I would be very into that. Even if it isn't necessarily D&D, but something along those lines, like a very creative, like, game environment. You know, even like a well-run Hero Quest game can be on that level. So I would be into that. But a part of that show is playing new games.
Yeah.
And some of the games aren't, like, super new, but they're new for the show. So, like, there's sort of a give and take there. And every once in a while, Will Wheaton and the guests think a game is super amazing, like Formula D. I just find it so boring to watch.
Well, let's move on to his second series, which is the Will Wheaton Project. Again, this is a series which just began airing a couple months ago. They're still in the middle of season one. And as he describes it, it is talk soup for geeks.
Yes.
A fairly accurate description.
It is. I still find it weird. I haven't seen Talk Soup since the 90s.
Yeah. Talk Soup in the 90s was my thing. Like, when I was a senior in high school, we had cable in the TV studio, which is where I spent, I think, four periods of my nine-period day, because I had late arrival, early dismissal. Then I was a teacher's assistant, and I took the actual class, and then I ate my lunch up there. So with VCRs and cable, I would spend most of my time watching The X-Files, but...
I was just going to ask, because I've heard you tell me the story this before, and usually it ends up with, like, I watched the entire run of The X-Files.
But during the actual class itself, that was when Talk Soup was airing on Comedy Central. So...
What?
Or E, sorry.
Okay.
So while we were supposed to be working in class, I was sitting in Master Control watching Talk Soup.
Yeah, Master Control program.
And it was very fun. And this is even more fun because it's for shows which I theoretically am actually interested in or maybe watch occasionally. You know, I don't watch much Jerry Springer, okay?
Okay.
I find it funny when they show clips with, like, people on Jerry Springer fighting and pulling each other's hair out.
Wait, is Jerry Springer still a thing?
I don't know. But it was in the 90s.
Yeah.
And now, you know, seeing clips from Game of Thrones or Leftovers and that kind of thing, it's amusing, especially when you sort of know that, like, this stuff is supposed to be taken seriously. And since I haven't seen most of it, I don't really... There's times where I'm like, is this edited in a funny way, or is this literally what you see on the episode? Because it's hilarious in this context. I like it.
Sort of. So far... On the Will Wheaton Project, I would say that's about half and half.
Yeah. And
I actually do watch almost all of these shows. Like, the only, like, there are, like, maybe one or two shows in this thing that I don't watch. But they are shows that I did at some point watch.
Does the Will Wheaton Project change your perspective on those shows?
No. There are times on the Will Wheaton Project where he's, like, I think... excessively generous towards these shows.
Do you feel that watching these shows and then following them up with the Will Wheaton Project enhances the shows that you just watched by sort of giving you that different perspective?
No, but I mean, it might just be me. I don't...
Or maybe the fact that you have sort of like an instant commentary for you to sort of hear, you know, someone else's perspective on that thing.
Not exactly. Like there were like maybe like four or five instances so far on the Will Wheaton project where I thought, I'm glad that somebody else is noticing how stupid that is.
Have you ever seen something on the Will Wheaton project and been like, I need to check out that show now?
No, but that's because I'm already pretty deep into most of them. Like the only show that like on the Will Wheaton project that I am not watching, I'm definitely not watching, is Salem.
Okay.
And it's because I cut that show off with like aggression because it was very, very silly.
I
felt embarrassed watching it, so I couldn't deal with it.
I'm always surprised by seeing, you know, some of the things which actually are on cable, which do exist as shows. I mean, they did one sort of weird reality show where it's like alien encounters and people like, you know, doing like reenactments of their encounters with aliens, and like this guy is running around like his cabin in the woods with a shotgun trying to shoot this alien who looks really, really funny and adorable in a very, very terrible CGI kind of way. And I'm like, wow.
I feel like winking to the audience, but there isn't one here.
That's a thing that exists, you know? I can't believe that.
Why is that surprising?
I guess I'm not as, you know, I don't do that thing that you would do in the 90s when you would channel surf. I don't channel surf, you know?
Oh, no, I don't.
But if you were to channel surf,
I don't
surf,
even know.
You would find
some... It would take me like an hour and a half in order to set up my system so that I could theoretically channel surf.
You would find some crazy stuff.
But like I try to find crazy stuff. I try to find weird stuff on a regular basis.
So like, have you seen this Bigfoot show where they're, I think it's called Finding Bigfoot, where they're always finding Bigfoot?
I haven't watched it, but I'm aware of it. I've seen clips of it.
Yeah.
Before the Will Wheaton project.
Yeah. Like, I want to see that alien show.
Uh-huh. There's not one. There are a lot of alien abduction shows.
But this one in particular looked pretty great. I don't know.
Okay. I mean, like, I mean, wow. There's so much out there. Like, I'm waiting until, like, the Will Wheaton Project deals with ancient aliens in depth, because that's a fantastically funny series.
Yeah, the Will Wheaton Project is opening up my eyes to new possibilities. And
like the Traveler did to Wesley?
Kind of, yes.
It's basically the same thing.
Will Wheaton is basically the Traveler for me when it comes to basic cable.
Is it possible that Will Wheaton was always the Traveler?
Mm-hmm.
And at some point he goes back in time and then plays that character?
Yeah.
Okay.
And on the whole, I do enjoy the Will Wheaton project quite a bit. It's not appointment television for me. I don't feel like I need to watch every episode in order, and that there can't be any gaps in my viewing of the series. But I do find it very fun to sort of turn on and watch passively.
Passive-aggressively?
No, just passively.
Oh.
Now and again. What about you?
Like I said, for the time being, I'm going to be watching this show. I don't know how long that'll last, because I don't really know how long my watching of any non-scripted show will go. But I'm still watching, like, Will Wheaton and Chris Hardwick's shows. You know, like, I'm excited that there's going to be more Falling Skies. Not because I'm a super big Falling Skies fan, but because I love that there's a talk show about it.
Only one more season, though.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. You know, you take what you can get. And but like, I'm into that. I'm into those things. And there is something sort of strangely weird about how friendly Will Wheaton and Chris Hardwick are, because they are in some weird ways like interchangeable in my brain.
Yeah,
like both do similar things, and I like them both far more than I should based on how much I know about them.
Okay, so between the two, Tabletop and Will Wheaton Project, do you feel like one is better than the other? Is there one that you prefer?
I would say, I don't know. I don't know if one is better than the other one, but I prefer Tabletop.
Okay.
And basically, for all of the reasons that you don't. I like that it's awkward. I like that it isn't super tight. I like that it isn't...
No, I mean the well awkward... put together. Like, the awkwardness and the looseness of it is fine. I think the problem is that at times that sort of falls into the boring department. You know what I mean?
The boring department?
Yes. So, whereas I don't see Will Wheaton Project falling into the boring department because it's so fast and just little snippets of things here and there. And if one thing doesn't work for you, then you've immediately moved on to the next thing. And I think with the Will Wheaton Project, while there may be things in there which are terrible, there's also things in there which are really funny. And I think that if you were to look at all of the Will Wheaton Project on the whole, you would find that, statistically speaking, it ends up in the good category. You know what I mean? Anyway.
So there's a boring department and a good category.
There's other things, too.
I mean, like, to me, like, the boring department is more enticing than the entertaining warehouse.
That's weird. Yeah.
Because the boring department has a much wider selection of books.
Perhaps. So, yeah, so I would pick the Will Wheaton Project if I had to pick one. But, I mean, I think that both of them are decent. Decent. Neither of them blew me away, but neither of them were the worst thing ever either. They're light.
I actually think every once in a while, Tabletop, like when I first saw Tabletop, it actually blew me away. I was impressed by that quite a bit. I'm still impressed by it. And not so much because of what they do, but just because, like, it is what it is. And it's not compromising on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of respect for that.
All right. So now, Will Wheaton has done a number of other things throughout his career. And I'm sure that you're probably a lot more familiar with them than I am.
Sure. Die Hard in a Private School.
Uh-huh. I haven't seen that.
That one where he played Stephen King.
I've seen that one, Stand By Me.
Yeah.
I watched that when I was probably right around his age, maybe a little bit younger. And I liked it. And he's made a number of appearances in other movies and stuff like that. But he's done a lot in terms of the internet. I do follow him on Twitter. I find him to be entertaining. I like the fact that he's a big hockey fan. I can kind of get behind that. But what about, like, books and stuff like that? Have you read any of his books?
Yeah, I've read two of his books.
Yeah, which ones?
Just a Geek and the one that he wrote right before that one, the first one, Dancing Barefoot.
Mm-hmm.
That one I don't remember very well.
What about?
Because I read that like 10 years ago.
What about Just a Geek? How was that?
I read that basically out of curiosity because I wanted to see him convince me that he was actually a geek.
Mm-hmm. Did he convince you?
He did, but I read it like with it was sort of I read it like I bought it out of like. Suspicion.
Sure. I mean, we were talking about that with Tabletop.
Yeah. But, like, I about halfway through, I was like, all right, I guess I believe you. There was no reason for me to be that suspicious of him. And it was just because, like, I knew that the moment I saw him online, I was super excited about it. And when he said, I'm a geek, I thought, no. Well, because I was playing into that bizarre, like, club nonsense thing that makes people do bizarre kind of,
you know, we're a
exclusionary.
Yeah. I mean, he is definitely, you know, a Star Trek fan and a Star Wars fan and all that stuff, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
And just to sort of cap this discussion off, you know, your feelings about his work on Star Trek as Wesley Crusher. Primarily.
In the first episode, I love Wesley Crusher. And when people would criticize Wesley Crusher, I would say that you are wrong about the show. And if you're going to criticize a character for not belonging there, honestly, I think it also kind of applies to Riker. A lot.
I don't know about that. Did you hear this whole thing? I don't know whether or not he's doing this. I guess by the time this episode comes out, we'll know. But he has been on Twitter talking about, he's going to San Diego Comic-Con, obviously, right? And he has been struck with the idea to cosplay as Commander Riker.
Yeah, I'm familiar with those.
That would be awesome.
I don't know what he's thinking.
He's thinking it would be awesome.
No.
And he's right in thinking
he's
that.
He's thinking that it will be funny.
It will absolutely be awesome because it will be funny. Yes.
But I don't think that he's realized how crazy those people are.
Which people?
The people who are reading that. The people who are talking about it right now. If he does this, it will not be over for years.
It'll be the best.
It will be a meme the likes of which he has never participated in before.
It would be the best. And then maybe next year he could get Jonathan Frakes to go as Wesley.
That's
adult Wesley.
An amazingly terrible idea.
It's the All best of the, idea.
I would like to see him wear the exact same clothes that adult Wesley is wearing in that episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that would be hilarious. Mm-hmm. Because that would make photoshopping that much easier.
It would be great. Maybe it'll happen. Who knows? I'm sure that if he were to say to a Novos, "Hey, could you put me together a Will Riker costume?" They'd be like, "Yes, here." Anyway, I guess that's pretty much it for Will Wheaton. Any final thoughts on Will Wheaton as a television show host and producer?
I don't think that we're even close to the end of this particular thing. I think there's actually going to be a lot more things along these lines. And Will Wheaton is definitely a positive force pushing these things in the right direction. I mean, we could easily lose any sort of quality in this media expansion. But apparently people are sort of following the right leads, and he's one of them.
I agree. And I do like how he's malleable enough to sort of change with the medium, you know? He is sort of a huge presence in geek culture, and he's willing to modify himself to become whatever what he's doing calls for, you know?
Well, I don't think that...
Whether it's writing or blogging or even on these two shows in particular, you know, he's producing and hosting essentially talk shows. But they both have very different formats, and his performance, for lack of a better word, is very different because of the shows.
Sure, but I don't think there's anything particularly strange about that. I mean,
I don't think it's strange. I just think that it shows a
Well, I don't think that he's being overly like flexible or malleable. I think he's doing what feels right.
He's doing what feels right, but there's a lot of people who, you know, are locked into doing that one thing. You know,
I think that Will Wheaton benefits essentially from people liking him as him.
Right.
If this particular career path like launched immediately after Next Gen, it probably wouldn't have worked
because
people would be freaked out by it.
He's not, even though he was an actor in the 80s and the 90s,
He's
not still trying to be an actor. Now he's trying to be himself, and he's realized that's, you know,
even as an actor,
he's a lot better at being himself than he is at being other people, essentially.
As an actor, he still kind of plays a version of himself.
Yeah.
And
at times. I mean, everyone does.
Like, his Big Bang Theory episodes. Like, I am not a fan of that show, but I watch the episodes that he's on.
Yeah.
Because he's actually really funny in that role.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's been fun talking about Will Wheaton, but that's not all that we're talking about this week on Trek FM, so here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, you're dealing with people who are, you know, stupid. I mean, you know, stupid and just so clouded with bigotry and stuff like that, that it's just like, well, what can you say to them?
Earl Grey.
Oh, that's right, because there was like an engineer lady.
Yeah.
I think Geordi...
She's basically
maybe?
Ariel, and she wants more. She wants to see where the
people are.
Wait,
does she have some thingamabobs?
The orb.
I think that's the thing that Casey does is he
he's able to take what the writers gave us and portray a man who is going to do a 180, and you're gonna believe it.
The Ready Room.
In watching it again today, preparing for this, I was appreciative of the fact that Wesley was there going, gee whiz.
To the journey!
I did like that we got to see some Jeans in Enterprise.
But that makes sense. I mean, it's kind of bridging the gap between 24th century and now. I don't want to see Captain Janeway in jeans.
Because you know they'd be mom jeans, right?
Commentary, Trek Stars.
I think that the term talk soup for geeks is actually very descriptive, which I still find very strange, because I still don't know how that possibly is an example that makes sense.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who watch, as they call it now, the soup.
I don't approve of that. That's disgusting.
Okay.
Literary Treks.
Each character had to go on a mission alone with Spock in a small craft, and that led them all to decide to leave the Enterprise.
I am not working with that guy alone ever again.
And introducing our newest show, Star Trek Axanar, the official podcast.
I've been having a great time experimenting with what works, what doesn't work. You know, what does a Klingon D6 sound like? No one really knows. We don't know what an impulse manifold or a fusion reactor on a D6 sounds like.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Windows Podcast Directory for Xbox and Zune, or you can stream them from the website. Just visit trek.fm/PD for Podcast Directory to get all the links. And before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring commentary, Trek Stars, to you each week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week, from classics to current bestsellers and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Federation. Audible has something for everyone, including Red Shirts, a novel with three codas by John Scalzi, which is being turned into a movie now and everything. And it's narrated by Will Wheaton, of course. Here's the synopsis for those people who may not be familiar. Ensign Andrew Dahl has just been assigned to the Universal Union capital ship Intrepid, flagship of the Universal Union since the year 2456. Life couldn't be better until Andrew begins to pick up on the facts that, one, every away mission involves some kind of lethal confrontation with alien forces. Two, the ship's captain, its chief science officer, and the handsome Lieutenant Kerensky always survive these confrontations. And three, at least one low-ranked crew member is sadly always killed. Not surprisingly, a great deal of energy below decks is expended on avoiding at all costs being assigned to an away mission. Then Andrew stumbles on information that completely transforms his and his colleagues' understanding of what the Starship Intrepid really is and offers them a crazy high-risk chance to save their own lives. And you can get this book for free since you're a listener to Trek FM. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. And we thank Audible for supporting Commentary, Trek Stars, and Trek.fm. And lastly, you can help us by donating to our website and getting some aliens. Well, illustrations of aliens, anyway. Illustrations by the one and only Toba Ushi, who does a lot of the artwork for our website. You can get them as badges or art prints. There's 8 aliens to choose from. Just let us know what you would like and in which format. Again, you'll find them at trek.fm/donate, and your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring us the show each week. So that's it. Season 4, Episode 13. We are halfway through this journey through the creators of Star Trek. Thoughts?
If we keep up on revising these things after their auditions, we're not going to be able to end it. Just so you know.
You never know. We'll see. Maybe we will have commentary Trek Stars supplemental.
Yeah, yeah.
As always, you can find us at Trek FM right here where we do this show, and I also do Standard Orbit with Drew. And you can find us on our website, commentarytrackstars.com, where we do commentary Track Stars off topic with Brandon. Or you can find us on Twitter at comtrackstars, or you can email us at comtrackstars@gmail.com. All right. Well, next week we will begin the second half of commentary Trek Stars by covering the last, as of right now, filmmaker to tackle the Star Trek franchise, and that is the one and only J.J. Abrams.